Well, Chalk River plays an important role. It was part of the Manhattan Project originally. In fact, the permission to build the Chalk River Nuclear Laboratories was made in Washington, D.C. in 1944. And the purpose was to actually produce the world's first heavy water reactors to produce plutonium for bombs, to demonstrate the utility of producing plutonium for bombs. And for 20 years after World War II, Canada actually sold not only a lot of uranium to the United States for bombs, but also plutonium. 250 kilograms of plutonium was sold to the American military for use in nuclear weapons. So at Chalk River, it was a very secretive establishment, and it even had a plutonium reprocessing plant and a second reprocessing plant to produce and separate plutonium. The very first samples of plutonium that the British received months before they exploded their first atomic bomb came from Chalk River. So Chalk River has played a key role in not only peaceful nuclear power, but also in the military applications. Of course, people will remember that in 1974, India exploded its first atomic bomb using a copy of a Chalk River reactor that was given to them as a gift by the Canadian government. So the result of all this is that the Chalk River site is very heavily contaminated with a lot of radioactive waste materials, 21 tanks of liquid waste, five or six different waste areas of intermediate and high-level waste. They even were the remains of two reactors accidents that took place in 1952 and 1958. The world's first nuclear meltdown took place at Chalk River in 1952, involving the NRX reactor. So we've had a long and checkered history. Because of complaints about the extreme contamination at Chalk River, the Government of Canada initiated a program called the Nuclear Waste Legacy Liabilities Program to clean up this waste. And in 2015, they hired a consortium of multinational corporations to carry out this work. And they decided to build a huge waste dump for low-level waste, which is seven stories high and which covers the area of 70 NHL hockey rinks, and which is right beside the Ottawa River, 1 kilometer from the Ottawa River, which feeds down to the St. Lawrence and which provides drinking water for over 10 million people. So this is why there's a lot of complaint about this particular facility.
What has most recently been proposed and approved, and what are the issues that local residents and many others are concerned about?
Well, there's two classes of people who are concerned here, the Indigenous and the non-Indigenous. The Indigenous people are the Algonquins, and the Algonquins, there are 11 Algonquin communities, and 10 of those 11 have expressed strong opposition to this waste dump because it affects the sacred sites of theirs, and it affects the Ottawa River, which is their sacred river. Of course, the Ottawa River flows down through the nation's capital, Ottawa, and also continues on its way down to Montreal, where it joins the St. Lawrence River. So all of the downstream population in Quebec is going to suffer the consequences of any leakage that occurs. Consequently, many of the municipalities, over 140 municipalities on the Quebec side of the border especially, have expressed opposition to this particular facility, which I must emphasize, this is not just a temporary facility, but it's intended to be a permanent facility. In other words, eternal. And yet, many of the radioactive materials going into this particular facility have half-lives. In fact, 19 of the 29 radionuclides listed in the inventory have half-lives of more than 1,000 years. Half-life means that's how long it takes for half of the material to go away. If you wait 10 half-lives, you're talking about 10,000 years, more than 10,000 years. Meanwhile, 12 of those 19 have half-lives of 100,000 years and more. So we're talking really about millions of years. They're building basically what amounts to an earthen mound, which is essentially a glorified landfill on the surface, right beside the Ottawa River, on a height of land that drains into a wetland that drains into the Ottawa River. So all of this material is ultimately destined, if it leaks, it's going to leak into the Ottawa River. And that is basically the complaint. Why choose such a terrible site for this waste? We believe it's just simply a matter of convenience. The industry, especially this consortium of multinationals, They say, we want to clear the area so that we can build more facilities. Let's just shove the stuff off, the waste, that is. Let's just shove the waste off to the perimeter of the property. Unfortunately, the perimeter of the property happens to be the Ottawa River. And right across on the other side of the Ottawa River is the province of Quebec. This is why Quebec municipalities in particular have been the most strongly opposed to this.
There's another aspect to this, and that is with the long-lived radioactivity, and we're talking about 19 different radionuclides that are contained in this waste. On-site wastewater treatment is only planned to be continued for 30 years. And after that, it's up to just whatever the liner is that is holding that material in place and the facility design to contain the mound's contents. How secure is that given the thousands of years that the radioactive material is going to be present?
Well, it seems ludicrous, really, when you think about the pyramids of Egypt being 5,000 years old, and this material on an earthen mound is supposed to be kept out of the environment for far longer than that, for hundreds of thousands of years. It seems that the membranes that they're talking about, very fancy membranes, which are intended to prevent leakage for long periods of time, they don't anticipate that those will last more than 1,000 years at the outside. And we doubt that it'll last that long. Because they're putting radioactive waste, some of the radioactive waste they're putting in there, they call it low level, but actually it's so radioactive. If anybody knows what cobalt-60 is, cobalt-60 is one of the most intense gamma-emitting radionuclides that we know, and it's totally man-made. And these cobalt-60 sources are sealed. They have to be shielded to protect the workers. The workers would get a lethal dose of radiation if they just came in direct contact with cobalt-60. So 99% of the initial radioactivity in the mound is going to be cobalt-60. And none of this stuff is actually cleaning up the Chalk River site. This is actually waste from commercial vendors of cobalt-60 around the world, both in Canada and overseas. And this waste is being brought into Chalk River for burial in this waste mound. So why should the people of the Ottawa Valley be exposed to commercial waste, which the commercial owners are unable to look after? Meanwhile, the Algonquins, who have traditionally lived there for many, many thousands of years, and who really know what thousands of years means, Canada hasn't even existed that long, they are completely opposed to this. They say there's no way that you should dump your garbage where you draw your water. And there's no way that you should make a permanent waste dump beside our sacred land. Even the site of the Chalk River Laboratories is really Algonquin territory. And according to the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People, there should not be any storage or disposal of toxic materials of any kind on Indigenous land without the free, prior, and informed consent of the Indigenous people. Well, and none of those adjectives work in this case. It's not free. It's not prior, because they were only told about this later on after the site had been selected. So there was no consultation about the siting of this particular waste dump, nor was there any consultation about alternatives. So we believe that this is a terrible mistake and one that future generations will curse us for. So this is really the problem.
One point to clear up. Should something happen that compromises the safety of the containment, what, if any, waste retrieval plan is in place if something goes wrong down the line?
There's no real waste retrieval plan, and that's another problem. The problem is that the waste inventory itself, although it's been enumerated in broad outline, the waste will not be packaged in such a way that those packages can be retrieved and repackaged if necessary. Also, some of the waste that's going into this mound is completely unnecessary to go there. For example, I mentioned the cobalt-60. Cobalt-60 represents 99% of the initial radioactivity, and actually it doesn't have to go into the mound at all. It only represents about 2 kilograms of material, and those 2 kilograms are all in readily packaged. They're already packaged in sealed sources. They could be stored in concrete vaults away from the river. There's absolutely no reason for them to go into the mound. If you take away the cobalt-60 and pretend it's not there, then the second most important element in the mound is tritium. Tritium is radioactive hydrogen, and it's very mobile, And it will readily escape into the Ottawa River in the form of radioactive water molecules. It turns out that the waste treatment facility they have has no ability to remove any of the tritium, nor does any of the municipal water treatment plants downstream. They don't have any ability to remove tritium from drinking water. So any tritium that escapes from the mound will go into the wetlands, drain into the Ottawa River untreated, and go into people's homes untreated. It seems crazy that the second most important radioactive material should be such a mobile material, which again could be stored for just a couple hundred years. It doesn't have a very, very long half-life. It's only 12.3 years, the half-life. But why should we put this in the mound knowing that it's going to end up in the Ottawa River? So there are many problems with the specific inventory. When you get into the long-lived materials, we have things like plutonium. Now, plutonium doesn't exist in nature, so it's not a natural contaminant of the soil. The only reason we have plutonium going into the waste is because we had a plutonium reprocessing plant at Chalk River, and this led to contaminated buildings. When they take those buildings down, the actual structures are contaminated with plutonium. Well, they don't have to put that stuff in the mound. When it's plutonium, which has a 24,000-year half-life, and which is one of the most toxic elements we know of, that should go into a separate facility away from the river, as we have seen in other parts of the world. As you go through the list of radionuclides that are going into the mound, you see reasons why this item or that item or the other item should not be going there at all. So what we have here is a case of reckless abandon. We have the consortium, for its own convenience, putting things into the waste that don't have to go there. Now, granted, there are large amounts of contaminated soil. Contaminated soil could be stored, if it's lightly contaminated, it could be stored above ground. But when you have packages that you know are contaminated with things like plutonium, they should be excluded. So what we see here is a failure of the government and the administration, as well as the regulatory agency, to discriminate in favor of the population and the indigenous people. Rather, they're making their decisions to accommodate the industry. And it's not even a Canadian industry. In this case, these are private companies who have been employed for this purpose. Two of them are Texas multinationals, Fluor and Jacobs. And by the way, these multinationals, every one of them, the three of them, they all have a history of legal problems having to do with fraud. And in many cases, they've been convicted of fraudulent behavior. So to put them in charge of this operation is highly questionable.
With the First Nations being so vocal on their opposition to this, they have five principles of radioactive waste management that have been articulated by the Anishinaabeg Iroquois Alliance of Indigenous People. What are those five principles?
Actually, I don't have them in front of me right now, but the first principle is that they should be kept away from the water. All Indigenous people regard water as the lifeblood of Mother Earth. It feeds all living things. And if you poison the lifeblood, then you poison really life itself. They believe that the first principle is to keep it away from water, which certainly doesn't apply for this particular case. The second one is to not to abandon it. You see, the problem with the word disposal has no scientific meaning. There is no definition of disposal that is scientific in nature. If you look at the definitions, it says that disposal means that we put the waste in a position where there is no intention to retrieve it. Well, that's a political definition, not a scientific definition. And so just because you don't want to retrieve it doesn't mean that that's safe. It doesn't mean that it even has meaning, that it's going to stay there simply because you don't want it to go anywhere else. So we don't believe that at the present state of knowledge, and the Anishinaabeg Iroquois Alliance says that we should not be abandoning this stuff. We should be keeping an eye on it. We should be packaging it in such a way that it can be repackaged and looked after by future generations. This means that the packages have to be very well labeled, and instructions must be given to future generations as to what to do once it starts leaking, how to look after it. Because this is something that is an intergenerational challenge. Another principle is not to import or export radioactive waste, but to try and manage it on site as much as possible. But if it's necessary to move it, for example, to move it away from a water system, then that should be done on the basis of consultation with those people who will be affected so that we can reach a consensus on what to do about it. So the whole idea here is that from the point of view of the industry, it's convenient for them to try and walk away from this waste. That way they can cut their liabilities and cut their responsibilities. But for the sake of future generations, we need to look after it. So it becomes really a societal problem. What the nuclear industry has done is created an enormous radioactive waste legacy, which is going to be around for countless generations. And this is a responsibility in our own self-protection. We citizens have to make sure that this is properly looked after. From another point of view, you could say that the wrong people are in charge of deciding these things, because the people who are in charge of deciding it are the very same people who produced the problem in the first place and who regards the waste primarily as a public relations problem rather than as a health and safety problem.
I believe it's Tina Cordova, who's the founder of the Tularosa Basin Downwinders, which has been fighting for compensation for those who are harmed by the Trinity blast, who pointed out that we are talking about radioactive waste that will be impactful for 7,000 generations. She did the math on that, which is a frightening number to consider. There is a concept called rolling stewardship. What is it, and what would that consist of?
Well, rolling stewardship is actually a term that was first coined by the U.S. National Academy of Sciences in the 20th century, around 1990. And it had to do not with radioactive waste, but with long-lived toxic waste of other kinds, such as heavy metals and so on, and PCBs and so on. And what they were saying is that these are intergenerational challenges, and we have to think of it in those terms. So what we need to do is to set up an awareness within society that just as we have firemen to deal with fires that might break out, just as we have other emergency responders to deal with situations, we have to have a social structure which allows for intergenerational management of these wastes and keeping them out of the drinking water, keeping them out of the food chain, keeping them out of the environment. And that needs perpetual maintenance, not all the time. When we say perpetual, it doesn't mean you have to change things every single year, but perhaps every 20 years, there has to be a changing of the guard and a transmission of all the information and resources necessary to continue monitoring these wastes, which must be stored in such a way as to be retrievable and easily repackaged. And the same thing should go. We've applied that same principle. When I say we, that's the Canadian Coalition for Nuclear Responsibility, of which I'm the president. We believe that that same principle should be applied to radioactive materials, because we do not have a solution. And that's the beginning of wisdom, is to say that we do not have a solution. A solution would mean that we know how to neutralize it or render it harmless. We don't know how to do that. There is no scientific principle which allows us to destroy this waste. Now, if there was a safe way, for example, of getting this waste material into the center of the sun, that would destroy it. But we don't know how to do that. When they send rockets up, they sometimes explode, they crash, they burn, and that would just spread the waste all over the world. So until we have an actual solution, we have a problem. And we have to recognize that that's a problem that does not have a solution. There are different ways of managing it. You can manage it above ground, you can manage it below ground, but that doesn't mean you can abandon it.
Some are calling this site a glorified landfill for radioactive waste, and your group, Canadian Coalition for Nuclear Responsibility, and two others are asking the Canadian Federal Report to review this decision. Where is that initiative now, and how is it supposed to proceed?
What's happening right now is that a number of non-Indigenous groups are making an appeal to the federal court to annul the decision of the CNSC on, and this can only be done on procedural grounds. In other words, in order to have this appeal heard, we have to argue that procedures were not followed, proper procedures. We mustn't revisit the actual evidence. There's no new evidence allowed. What we have to say is that the regulatory agency has not followed its own procedures. They have ignored many things. We have listed those things which are procedural errors, and there's about seven of them. And we're hoping that the court will agree with us, in which case it would only mean that the court would rule that this decision was made on incorrect grounds and therefore it has to be redone. So it would simply mean that the decision has to be revisited. It wouldn't mean that the project would be stopped, but it would be paused while a better process is put in place. We're also appealing, however, to the federal government directly, saying that the federal government has a duty to respect the rights of Indigenous people, and they are ignoring that duty, and that consequently, they should not delegate that duty to the regulatory agency. They have a direct duty outlined by the Supreme Court of Canada to consult Indigenous people and to respect the treaties that establish their rights. So we believe that the federal government, on a completely different ground, not a legal ground, but a political ground, should intervene and say, we're going to stop this project because the rights of Indigenous people have not been respected. Now, we have a precedent for this because years ago, about 10 years ago, there was in Ontario, we have a large nuclear-based utility in Ontario, which has 11 nuclear reactors, and they have been wanting to find a site for their low and intermediate level waste. They chose a site near Lake Huron for a deep geological repository to put their low and intermediate level waste in, not on the surface, not a glorified landfill, but deep underground, which seems to be at least better than above ground. And they also, after years of hearings and discussion, when the local Indigenous people, who are called the Saugeen Ojibwe Nation, made it clear that they did not give their consent, Ontario Hydro, Ontario Power Generation at this time, said, okay, the project is canceled. You don't consent. We're not going to do it. Now, that's what the federal government should be doing. In other words, we have here a provincial utility which is not bound by the Supreme Court ruling the way the federal government is to respect Indigenous rights. They're showing more respect for Indigenous rights by walking away from their plan than the federal government is showing. And we're asking the federal government to assume its responsibilities, stop abdicating its responsibility, and act to respect the rights of the Algonquins. And there is a third appeal, a legal appeal by the Algonquins and the other First Nations involved. This appeal is based solely on Indigenous rights and doesn't have to do with any procedural errors, but simply says our rights have not been respected. So there are basically three avenues of recourse that we're looking for right now. Two of them are legal, and one of them is political.
A recent article you sent around stated that even as concerns persist about the radioactive waste disposal site, this mound next to the Ottawa River, this person in the article stated, all we can do is hope for the best. What do you have to say to that?
Well, I think we can do a lot more than hope for the best. I think we can plan for the future. And planning for the future means rolling stewardship. It means recognizing that we do not have a permanent solution to this problem. And therefore, we have to bend over backwards to make sure that the siting is such that it does not endanger major water bodies, does not endanger major wildlife, and that the materials which is most long-lived is not stored on the surface. It should be stored in a much more secure location, deep underground. If something is only going to be dangerous for a couple of hundred years, it makes sense to store it properly, don't allow it to leak, and it's feasible that we can look after it for a couple of hundred years. For longer-lived materials, they need to be stored more securely so they can weather vicissitudes, both natural and political. If we have a bad government, if we have a bad weather conditions, if we have earthquakes, if we have tornadoes, if we have floods, it should be able to withstand those things. An earthen dump, an earthen landfill perched beside the Ottawa River is hardly a harbinger of safety for the future.
Is there anything else we haven't covered that you want to make certain we know about?
Yes, I would like to point out that this is the first time in Canadian history that any permission has been given to permanently, essentially abandon man-made radioactive materials, human-made radioactive materials. These things do not exist in nature, most of them. Most of them were created as a result of the fission process. That means that these wastes are not as old as I am. I'm 83 years old. These wastes are younger than that. They didn't exist in nature before 80 years ago. So I think that we have to proceed in humility We have to proceed with a sense of awareness that we're dealing with a brand new problem that no past generation of humans ever had to deal with. Also, we have to deal with the fact that this is going to be precedent setting. If we can do this in Canada, then every country around the world can say, hey, Canada did it. Why don't we just pile our radioactive waste up beside a river or a lake and just hope for the best? So hope for the best becomes the slogan of the future. That's hardly a good platform to rest our children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren's future on. We have an obligation to future generations going forward for many, many countless thousands of generations, as you said before, and also to the indigenous people who looked after this land for many, many thousands of years going back into the past. So if we have respect for our own past and for our own future, then we know that this is not the right thing to do.
I think that the full phrase is hope for the best, but plan for the worst. And the second half of that is not present in the current situation up in Canada. Is there anything that we can do to support you, be the listeners in Canada or any place else around the world?
Support is always appreciated. And also the Canadian government often pays more attention to voices from outside the country than inside the country. We've seen this oftentimes in the case of literary figures, both in Canada and the States. You know that some of the most revered literary figures were first recognized outside the country before they were celebrated inside the country. Thinking of people like Faulkner and Hemingway, who made a name for themselves in Europe and then became recognized and celebrated in the States. We've had the same experience with our writers. Well, the same thing goes with problems. Sometimes if neighbors point out the problem, more attention is paid to it because we want to be good neighbors. And so any expression to the Canadian government of concern over the failure to respect future generations, to respect the Ottawa River, and to respect the Indigenous people would be very welcome.